Beans, Couch, Potatoes across the country, around the world, and on the internet. I'm Kevin Carr.
And I'm Nick Harriman. You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies.
That's right. We have Nick back. He was on, actually, not too long ago.
March.
It was March. Yeah, it was during, I remember it being Project X.
Yes. The infamous Project X.
And the Lorax. Wasn't it like both movies ended in X?
Yeah.
It was a double X weekend.
skipping that. But I didn't see the Lorax. You saw the Lorax, but yeah. I sort of chimed in and my ignorance of Dr. Seuss sort of shone through.
That's right. That's okay. I will forgive you for that, obviously, because I have you back on the show. we have him back. We're going to be talking about some movies here, and glad you can join us again. We'll talk about where you are and all that kind of thing. Let's get through the paperwork first. If you want to get a hold of us, you can go to fatguysatthemovies.com. You can go to iTunes and search Fat Guys at the Movies. We pop right up, and you can also search the Fat Guys Network and all of our podcasts. We have a whole bunch of different things. We got the Idiot Boxers. We got Celluloid Spotlight. Meryl Barr just started a podcast for Nikita for when that comes back next season. So if you want to see, hear some TV stuff, that's there too. You can go to facebook.com/FGATM for Fat Guys of the Movies and like our page and, you know, post pictures of us on your wall and that kind of thing. Or pictures of you on our wall, I guess, if we allow it. I don't even know if they can. Anyways, you can then also email us at fatguys@filmschoolrejects.com. We have an email this week we're going to read in the third segment. There's also a voicemail, 740-205-6456. So feel free to call us and let us know, I don't know, anything. We also have a donation button. If you happen to go to the Fat Guys in the Movies page, there's a donation button because we're beggars and paupers. We're asking for money, and you know, we always will give you a shout out if you, you know, chime in, throw in a couple bucks and help us pay for our server and that sort of thing and the hosting duties. Big thanks to Steve Reeves from Thesar, Thesar 3000.com. He's got his own review site and through it kicked us a little bit of cash. We'll give you a plug on whatever you want as long as it's clean enough to say on the radio. That's
considering,
about it.
Considering I swore last time I was here. So.
Yeah, you just launched into it, didn't you? No, you said something and then you swore because you swore. You were embarrassed, I think. Wasn't that what happened?
I wasn't so much embarrassed, just annoyed.
Well, you're never embarrassed for swearing.
Not me.
Marcus Cerrito was on a couple, like about a year ago, and did basically the same thing. He swore, and I'm like, you should swear. He's like, oh, bleep, bleep, bleep. And I'm like, oh, my Lord.
So I don't think the second time he had to bleep me, I think I sort of went under the radar. I don't think the mic picked it up.
Okay, so. I may have just pulled it out.
Yeah.
I don't actually bleep it on the when it goes online. I bleep it for when it goes on the internet, yeah. For the radio, because I have standards. They're not much.
Yeah, I was going to say. You know, you have me on the air, so obviously your standards are not high.
Well, speaking of low standards, talk about where you're from and where you people can find you.
I run a site called Movies Hate You Too, and that's I hate Kevin. Or...
wait a minute. You have to define what hate is? That's hate. That's not the...
Well, we talked about this last time. Sometimes
people...
That's
not the Arabic word, hate, which is a paste made of goose liver.
Every once in a while, someone will say, like, hate, like, I ate the movie. And we talked about this last time.
You ate a movie.
I know a lot of people that are not terribly bright and try and get them to come to my site. So I have to sort of explain it so they don't end up on some other site. So.
That's actually a real pain is to get with the internet, with all the everything strung together, that sort of thing. Because, you know, sometimes the words don't make sense or they people will type them in wrong.
Mm-hmm.
I used to write for a site called Columbus Scene, kind of like a city scene. It has nothing to do with city scene, but it's Columbus Scene. But when she designed it, the logo, the end of Columbus, because it was a city we live in. And the first letter of scene, S-C-E-N-E, were the same. So it actually reads as Columbu scene or Columbus keen. When you type it in, it was the hardest thing to explain to people. Or like another great example is, are you familiar with Community? Do you watch Community?
I've seen it every once in a while.
But... The character of Troy is played by Donald Glover, who's he's a comedian.
Mm-hmm.
And his father originally got the name Donald Glover for Twitter. So twitter.com/Donald Glover. And I think he's gotten it back from his dad for that. So he said, well, I'll make it Don Glover. Write it down. Look at it. You'll understand why it was embarrassing for him. Anyways, let's move on. Is there anything else you want to talk about where you're from? Just Movies Hate You Too?
Yeah, I also have a Twitter page, you know, but it's Movies Hate You, the letter U, too. And then you can find me on Facebook at You know, Facebook.com, Movies Hate You Too.
I'm sure I asked you this. Did you reserve the name Movies Hate You Too with the numeral two?
No, I didn't.
You probably should, because maybe there's movies that absolutely hate Bono and The Edge.
And I purposely made sure I didn't do You Too.
Yeah.
When I did the Twitter because of that, because I didn't want it to be like a You Too Twitter page.
What do you think? Do you like You Too?
Yeah, hate I think. You know, Bono is a little bit much sometimes, but the music is good.
Well, we all know the true history of Bono from South Park.
Yes, we know it all too well. But hot.
It's not like it was like Movies Hate Shakira or Kesha or something like that.
Selena.
Oh, it's not too soon. You whispered it. You're like, you made some crass Natalie Wood comment to me, and I kind of like poo-pooed you off air. And you're like, what? It's not, she died years ago. And you're like,
it's been 30 years for Natalie Wood.
Selena, I'll whisper it. No one will know she's dead. Everyone thinks it's just Jennifer Lopez. Anyway.
Speaking of people, that should be. Never mind.
Go on.
No, I don't want
to. This isn't playing Brooklyn. I mean, isn't she Jenny from the Block back there? I mean, this is in Wyoming. So if you want to call for the anything of Jennifer Lopez, let's move on. Let's start with the first movie to review, and that is What to Expect When You're Expecting, an ensemble rom-com based on an overly panicky freak-out book about.
I just wanted the glow. The one that they promised you on the cover of those magazines. Well, I'm calling it. Pregnancy sucks. Making a human being is really hard. I have no control over my body or my emotions. Scare Bear, I'm sorry. All I want to do is punch you in the face.
You drop your kid of a changing table?
Stuff just happens, okay? Last week, my kid ate a cigarette.
I caught him playing in the dryer yesterday.
I picked up the wrong baby from daycare.
Found my baby swimming in the toilet.
I'm assuming you have no interest in seeing this.
There's that or just throwing my money away and... I'd probably get more enjoyment out of watching someone else pick money out of the trash than watching that.
So. This movie looks terrible. And they didn't screen it, and there's not a big surprise why. Well, partly it's Lionsgate, and Lionsgate screens very thin. And they screened it, like, in Cleveland, but I wasn't going to drive 2 hours for that.
They screened it twice in Cleveland.
Yeah. Well, and the thing is, it's along the lines of... what's the one with Jennifer Connelly and... He's not that into you, and then Valentine's Day and New Year's Eve, where they have these ensemble comedies, and everybody has. Here's the thing, though. I come at this, and I've seen the trailers, and it looks like crap. But my wife, I have three kids, and the first thing that happens when you're pregnant, your pediatrician gives you the book, What to Expect What You're Expecting, which should be titled 1001 Ways You Can Probably Kill Your Baby. Because it's just nothing but panic and over freaking out. And my wife really just went nuts. And my cousin, same thing when she got pregnant, just went nuts. And they found this book called The Girlfriend's Guide to Pregnancy, which is actually written by a former Playboy model. And she probably just lays it out. She's like, well, this is what happens. And this is what people say. And this is what people do. But because What to Expect When You're Expecting is given out by pediatricians, it's like, overly freaky about, well, you got to do this and this and this or your kid will, the head will explode.
So is it like making sure you actually put like little covers over your electrical outlets or is it?
I don't know. I never read it. I'm not that interested. I said people have been having babies for thousands of years. I don't need this. Anyways, that can preemptive suck. We got to go to a break. And welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies. We just sort of dismissed What to Expect What You're Expecting.
Expect it to sort of be bad.
Yeah, expect it to be exactly what the trailers look like. If you laughed at the trailers, first of all, shame on you. Second of all, oh well.
You sort of deserve it if you go see it. You deserve what you get.
You deserve that. You deserve that shame in your life. Speaking of shame, let's talk about the next movie, which is The Dictator. Sacha Baron Cohen plays a ruthless dictator who travels to America and has to live like an average person while a double takes his place.
I am for free press, fair elections, and equal rights for women. I can't say that.
Supreme Leader, the United Nations demands that you come to New York and address them.
Fine! We are going to... America.
I ain't gotta tell you what this shit boy hold from
Emerald
General. Welcome to New York City. And while you're here, I highly recommend a visit to the Empire State Building before you or one of your cousins takes it down.
You saw this because we saw this together. I want to hear what you think about it first. You take first crack.
I really like The Dictator. I'll be completely honest. You know, I really like. I didn't care for Bruno so much. I thought it was funny in scenes, but I thought the joke went on too long.
Yeah.
And I really, really enjoyed
Borat.
But I thought The Dictator was possibly the best one out of those three, if you want to sort of put those three together.
It's more cohesive because it's an actual narrative.
Yeah, and it doesn't overstay its welcome. It's right at, like, what was it, 83 minutes or it's something
short.
Like that.
But Bruno and Borat were both pretty short, too, if I'm not wrong.
Yeah, for some reason, I felt like Bruno felt much longer.
See, but there's not a whole lot of love out there for Bruno. I liked them both. I really did enjoy them. But The Dictator really falls in that same level of humor.
Yeah, it definitely does. And I think to a certain extent, The Dictator actually works somewhat better in some ways because you don't feel bad for anyone that's in it being like duped or tricked.
Yeah, it's not real people getting screwed.
Yeah, and some of them deservedly so got screwed because they just said terrible things and got caught on camera saying them.
Yeah.
But this, you won't feel any of that, like, buyer's remorse, I guess.
Yeah, I loved both Borat and Bruno. I preferred Bruno. I preferred Borat. I thought Borat was a better movie. But I liked Bruno, and actually I think Bruno was a little ahead of its time. If it came out like today, I think it'd be because it really touched on a lot of the issues of homosexuality and, you know, gay rights and stuff that's really making the news now. And I think it was just a little bit too early, and people were still terrified because that was the first movie I ever reviewed on the air in on my TV segment that I used to do. And I'm like, really, this is what I start with? And I asked the segment producer, I go, am I allowed to say that if you're homophobic, you probably won't like this movie? And she's like, no, you can't say that.
Yeah, and it didn't, my dislike of it didn't really have anything to do with that. I just, yeah. And it wasn't even dislike, I'm just very sort of indifferent to it, to the point where it's just like, I don't know if I ever need to see it again, or I don't need to see it very often.
Well, part of
but maybe I need to go back and sort of give Bruno another try.
Yeah. Well, Borat was also, it was the first one. It's always hard to top that first one. If you make a movie, I mean, not that he did that character on a show, but that was the one that kind of took a lot of people by surprise. And you didn't know what to expect. Now, what's funny with The Dictator is when the trailers first came out, I rolled my eyes. I was like, this looks terrible. It doesn't play funny. And I think it suffers from what, Superbad suffered from, where the really funny parts, you either have to be delivered embedded in the movie, or you can't put them in a TV trailer.
Yeah, and I was sort of resistant at first to The Dictator as well, because I just kept thinking of Sacha Baron Cohen doing like his best John Turturro from the bad Adam Sandler movie, where he plays in another like Arab character.
Yeah.
Oh, and I just kept
Zohan.
Thinking, yeah, don't mess with the Zohan. I just kept thinking he's just doing a John Turturro impression.
Well, and the double that he plays of himself, it comes across as a bad Adam Sandler character. but he does it better. It's not as excruciating as Adam Sandler does. No. But what's funny is right out of the gate, I remember I was sitting next to you when we were watching it, and right out of the gate, they throw a running gag in there that is brilliant. And they play it throughout the movie, but they don't overplay it. And the first scene where they use that gag, and I'm not going to say because I don't want to give it away, but I lean over to you, and it's like within the first couple minutes of the movie, and I say to him, I go, okay, that was pretty funny. and then from that point on, and they do stuff like the entire soundtrack, all the pop songs in it are Wadian covers, because he's from the fake country of Wadia. And so they're Wadian covers. So they have like 9 to 5 playing, but it's... But it's a Dolly Parton sound-alike singing it in the Wadian language.
Yeah, it's honestly, I don't buy a lot of soundtracks anymore, but I might have to go find it because I can just imagine riding with someone in the car and throwing that on and being like, what are you playing?
Yeah. And I mean, it uses a lot of the same humor as Borat, more than the humor from Bruno. Because Bruno, the humor relies on the extreme wacky nature of the character, so it's much more that sort of that you know, that foreigner, that racist foreigner, sexist, anti-Judaism, you know, anti-Semitic character, which is what Borat is and also what this dictator is. Now, they're both very different characters, but they all have, both of them have the same, some of the same social pitfalls.
Yeah, and all the jokes are sort of double-edged because it's like, okay, well, Sacha Baron Cohen's making this joke, and but then the joke's sort of also on him.
Yeah.
So he's making fun of somebody, but it's also sort of making fun of the character. So it's sort of a wash on how offensive it is.
Yeah.
In my mind, at least.
Oh, it's offensive. But it's not like Bruno. I don't think it's not a movie that's going to get walkouts. Bruno got, when I saw Bruno, I saw it in Cincinnati. And some of the people that actually sponsored the screening walked out en masse.
Yeah, Dictator, you'll hear, you know, we heard some groans and I saw some head shaking from some of the older crowd. You know, depending on race, creed, and nationality, they might find some things less funny than others.
Yes.
But, you know, across the board, you know, if you have a good sense of humor and don't take things too seriously, the Dictator is a lot of fun.
Yep. I give it a totally rocks. What do you say?
4 out of 5 since I do.
Yeah. Well, you got to say rocks or sucks or kind of rocks, kind of sucks. It's a requirement. If you're going to be on the show, you must. Schnell, what do you say?
So then you need to discuss this off the air with me so I know this.
We've done this before.
You never made me like commit to like a rock. Because
the one you reviewed last time was Project X, and that was just a totally sucked. Yeah. You can agree with that.
Yeah. So what's like 4 out of 5?
It's either sucks or rocks. And then it's either kind of sucks or kind of rocks. For sort of like, I usually say if it's a 4... or a 5, it's a rocks. If it's
then it's definitely a rocks.
Yeah, maybe a 3.5. If it's a good 3.5,
I'll give it I would go with a 4 for me out of 5.
That's definitely a rocks. So we both said that rocks. Next one is Battleship. Peter Berg blows up lots of things, puts Rihanna in charge of weapons, and pits the Navy against aliens, just like the board game you remember as a kid.
I'd like to welcome you all to the RIMPAC International Naval War Game.
Unknown surface contact, 8,000 yards.
Is this some kind of exercise?
Probably. I want to have this thing thoroughly investigated.
We'll get a team in the water right away.
Get me on it.
They've created a barrier.
My radar's totally down.
We can't seem to penetrate it.
We have 3 destroyers still unaccounted for, so it's conceivable we do have somebody inside.
All right, you have 2 minutes. Do you want me to go first? Because I have a feeling you're going to swear. And this will spill over.
I don't need to swear. The only thing that Battleship really sinks is Taylor Kitsch's, you know, career as a leading man.
I love the fact that in the movie, he talks like this. You know, especially in the beginning, they like modulate his voice. He sounds like freaking Darth Vader in the beginning. He's like, I'm going to go over and talk to that girl.
And any movie with really great script writing where immediately when you introduce 2 male characters, one has to call the other one bro or brother. Yeah. To introduce them as brothers.
I have a sister. I have never called her sis in my entire life.
I'm an only child, and I know that that's a cliche, and that no one does that.
I have 3 sons. They never refer to each other. They never say, hey, bro, hey, brother. They never do.
They don't call each other. Well, they don't have phones, probably, or cell phones yet. They don't call each other, hey, bro, what's going on?
What's up, bro? Here's the thing. The first half hour of this movie,
35 minutes
is excruciating because there are no aliens.
It's the most irrelevant 35 minutes I've ever sat through.
It's haphazard. I mean, look, I am not a fan of Michael Bay, and I'm not a fan of the Transformer movies. I can appreciate him for them just being fun action movies, but I'll be the first to say he for a guy who knows nothing about scripts, he does a lot of script work in his movies, and he has too much dialogue and all that kind of stuff. I mean, it's Oscar-winning material compared to the first 35 minutes of Battleship. I mean, they're bonding over a chicken burrito. And then you've got Rihanna, who can't deliver a line to save her. I mean, she literally will just, like, just randomly spout out words. It's like she has aphasia. Maybe she got that from Chris Brown punching her in the face too much.
And you give me, you know, grief about Natalie Wood jokes. Yeah. And here we are, you know, we're only, what, a year or maybe 2 years out of the
making movies. We got to go to a break. We're going to talk more about Battleship in a little bit.
Miles of hard road,
33 years of tough luck. 44 skulls buried in the ground, crawling down through the muck. Oh, yeah.
And welcome back to Fat Guys of the Movies. We are in the infamous middle segment. We were talking about Battleship. We're going to continue to talk about Battleship, and I can lay down my awesome pun and just call it Battleship. Because we can swear in this segment. See?
Hooray!
You know,
I've been waiting for the pun all night, and it finally arrived, and
I crushed it, man.
Is that what we're calling it?
That's what I'm calling it. Anyways, Rihanna and her aphasia. I mean, she literally is like, dog bone, basketball, blight, Arden, Wednesday, Jupiter, and she just says, randomly saying words. I really don't think that she had a script. I think she can't. I mean, she's not coherent. Again, I think she's been punched in the head too many times.
It's one of those things where I feel like we have Liam Neeson. We got the guy from John Carter from Mars. We got Alexander Skarsgård. We have this sort of
secondary list.
Yeah, we got sort of a really white cast going forward, and we need something to bring in another element to the audience. And
non-white character who's kind of like only part black. Isn't she like she's?
I'm not.
She's not like a. I don't think both her parents are black, are they? So they didn't even get the.
I did not study the page. I did not study it before.
You did not study it. It's being Rihanna.
I didn't study her like genetic makeup.
Rihanna is colossally bad in this movie. And here's the other thing I think is funny is her and Brooklyn Decker. They're like, they look extremely alike. If you look at their facial features, I mean, Rihanna is just a darker version of Brooklyn Decker with smaller boobs.
Yeah, and I've never even up until today, I've never even heard of this girl.
What you didn't see? Just go with it.
Well, we talked about it. I'm not even sure we're talking about the same girl. I thought she might be the girl with the camel toe.
Yeah, you identify her as the camel toe girl.
If that's actually, who she is.
She's okay.
Yeah, I just don't know.
Yeah.
I know she's not Jennifer Aniston. So.
She's the one who's not Jennifer Aniston. Okay. And just go with it.
Okay, so then, she's
I'm pretty
she's
sure
camel
not,
toe.
In the credits does not roll and say camel toe girl, Brooklyn Decker. Brooklyn Decker's beautiful, and she's got enormous knockers. Actually, her boobs. Let's talk boobs here for a second. And I know this sounds like a cliche. I love boobs. I love me some boobs.
I've got no issue with it at all.
But the problem is her boobs are like almost too big. They don't quite fit her body. It's sort of like when you watch a porn star who's got those enormous G cups, and you're just like, okay, that'd be like nice for
a nap.
Well, yeah, but I mean, just sort of like to be curious to see, but it's like,
This is not the first time Kevin said something about being curious and referencing any type of
some
pornography.
I'll tell you.
I'm just curious. I wanted to try it one time.
This is a true story. I'm going to share a little more than I probably should. But hey, we're in the middle segment.
God.
I was in Miami Beach about 10 years ago or so, 10 or 11 years, 10 or 12 years ago. No, it was like right after, it was like December of 2001. So it was right after 9/11. I remember flying. I remember it just was the first time I flew after 9/11. So I was in Miami Beach and me and a friend, we went to the strip club. And there was this woman who had enormous Brooklyn, like a person's head size breasts.
Hmm.
And I got a private dance room because I was just curious. I'm just like, curious as to what they, and it was, she was okay, but that was obviously, that was what she was known for.
So had the milk gone bad or
no? She wasn't unattractive, but she wasn't like gorgeous. She was just that was her thing, and it just kind of was like, well, they were fake first of all.
Oh, of course,
because they don't grow that big. They don't grow them that big in Texas, anyways. But it just kind of was. Don't get me wrong, I love boobs, but those were just. It was almost like I wouldn't know what to do with them. It's sort of like if somebody came home and gave you a peach, like a piece of fruit peach, and it was the size of a basketball. You wouldn't know what to do with it.
I think most of it would get thrown away.
Yeah, and I had to throw her away.
Yeah,
after I murdered her. Oh, whoops! Did I say that out loud?
Pretty much, society's done that to her already.
That's true.
Or at least her family has. Zing! Strippers.
We just lost body odor and daddy issues.
We just lost the entire stripper audience.
Oh shit. Anyways, but yeah, Brooklyn Decker, she was lame. She was worthless in this movie. She, you saw her cleavage, But even then, they didn't do much
and
with her.
Near the beginning, when she's like laying on top of John Carter from Mars, yeah. You know, and I'm actually looking at her breasts.
You mean the Armageddon ripoff scene?
Yeah, yeah. You know, we're going to save the world with our, you know, animal cracker scene.
Yeah.
No animal cracker, sorry, guys. Mm-hmm. But I'm looking at her boob, and it's like, it's almost too long. It's like, you know, they're flattened out on his chest, and yeah. There is like too long, and it's just like,
I just wouldn't know what to do. I mean, it'd be sort of like, have you ever tried, I mean, somebody like you or me who are not professional basketball players, have you ever tried to palm a basketball? Mm-hmm. It just doesn't work. Now, maybe for like, you know, Michael Jordan, Michael Jordan's okay. Magic Johnson's the ones with AIDS, so she wouldn't want to have sex with him. Michael Jordan, okay.
Well, I think, didn't he get rid of the AIDS, though? Or he's not testing positive for AIDS now?
Well, that's...
For
HIV? You can't use South Park as a source of news.
No, I'm not. I thought, seriously, maybe I'm confusing, you know, reality and, you know,
well, I think he just
fiction. I don't think he's testing positive for it anymore.
Is he? I don't know. I don't follow Magic Johnson.
I just know...
It's not because he has AIDS. I just don't care about basketball.
Well, especially the fact that he doesn't play anymore, and it's been like 20 years, yeah. So...
Well, and then, I mean, Michael Jordan, he has the Hitler mustache. Does he have a Hitler mustache? Or did that go the way of Magic Johnson's age?
I think the Hitler mustache was only when he was doing the Hanes commercial with the bacon neck guy.
Okay.
They had the Hitler stash, and it was really awkward.
Yeah, it was.
Like, I wasn't sure.
Not as awkward as if, like, Woody Allen showed up with one. That would be awesome. Don't you think Woody Allen should just start sporting a Hitler stash?
I'm not even sure he has enough like testosterone to grow it.
I think he's banging as many people as he possibly can. I'm sure he's got plenty of testosterone. I don't know where he keeps it. It's not showing up on the rest of his body, but no. He's a horny motherfucker. I'll tell you that.
Well, you know, the motherfucker is an app.
Or daughter fuckers.
I was going to say, he likes them a little bit younger than mothers.
That's right. That's a dilf. That's a daughter I'd like to fuck is what he calls them. Anyways, wow, how did we...
This is the second time this has happened to us, and, you know, Battleship is bad. It's real, real bad.
Mm-hmm.
Kevin likes it more than I do, but I found nothing, and I like bad movies, and this was just... It's how many... Was it 133 minutes?
Yeah, it was like an hour and 30. And they have something at the end, so you do have to sit through the whole credits. Most people do.
You don't.
Nick Fury comes up and asks the aliens to be part of S.H.I.E.L.D.
But it's about... I would say if it was about 45 minutes long, it would probably be okay.
Mm-hmm.
But as a 2 hour and 13 minute movie, you might be better off going and seeing what to expect when you're expecting.
Well,
because it's probably the pain's going to be over quicker. I can guarantee you that.
I thought Battleship was, if you walk in a half hour late to Battleship, you're fine.
You've missed nothing.
Cause it's all character. Cause I was like, when are the goddamn aliens going to show up? Cause
when are the battleships going to show up? They don't even get to a battleship. There's a scene where you think that maybe, you know, the guy had his kidney removed,
yeah,
you know, in a bathtub full of ice, and you're like, where does this come from?
They make no, because that's one of the things he does. He goes in a bathtub, and I'm like, they don't explain it. There's no thing of like, oh, you done that once. Like, no, he just was in
and
a bathtub
what they,
of ice.
And that's what they cut out of the movie. There's so much stuff they left in that just is completely...
I can't imagine. Oh, and then it gets cheesy and ridiculous. And the other thing that's funny is when the ship lands and when the aliens do show up, they put this giant electromagnetic shield around the entire Hawaiian Islands. And then, like, they cut to this shot of the Navy, and you can see the island, like, literally just outside of the port of Honolulu, and they're outside of the shield. And I'm like, they didn't even match their geography of what's happening.
Well, and
in
then
the
they're trying to like call the camel toe girl is trying to call John Carter from Mars, and
yeah,
you know, supposedly they're outside of the bubble, but then they're calling from inside the bubble.
It doesn't make a whole lot of sense. Yeah, because the John Carter, they should have been in the... I don't know what's going on. You're right, because they're like, well, we can't call him, we should be able to. But I'm like, wait, you're in the bubble or not? There's a lot of stuff in this movie that's not well thought out. It looks cool. There's some cool action. And I will say this, as a movie, if you want to see is just shit blow up, walk in a half hour late, enjoy the movie, and then go home. But it's not just to check your brain at the door. It's to check your brain at the door and lose your ticket and forget you have a brain. and then maybe go see the movie.
I would even say you could show up an hour late and not miss anything. Well, you're 35 minutes in.
You want to see the action.
No, but what really happens even in the 25 minutes after they finally get to the ships, they still around for another 25 minutes doing nothing.
There's at least the ship show. As long as I think you're fine once the ship shows up. It's all the characterization that they do that's terrible.
You're obviously forgetting about, the soccer games.
Well, that was in the first half. I looked. It was a half hour from when the ships actually make it and
I looked at it
35 minutes.
35 I looked at 35 minutes and I think we were past that point and we were like to the ships but still playing soccer.
No, soccer was within the first half hour. Easy within the first. No, soccer was way, way, way earlier.
What about the bathroom fight?
Bathroom fight was beforehand. Because I remember when the aliens first come under the atmosphere and they land, basically. It was right after, because our thing started at 7:30, and it was right after 8 o'clock.
Yeah, it was like 8:05 or 8:07.
That's when they land. And there's more stuff happening, but at least when the aliens show up, it's this
build-up. You know you're only at least about 30 minutes away from actually something interesting happening.
And they do have some decent action. Now, it makes no sense. I mean, these aliens come all across space, and, they thousands of light years or hundreds of light years across space, and they don't carry firearms, yet they can blow up entire ships. They
don't even wear gloves.
They don't wear gloves on their spacesuits, and they have helmets that just slide right off. I mean, there are certain design flaws.
And then they have, porcupine goatees, and, it's...
And, I mean, they look like Halo. You expect the Kia hamsters to pull up and start dancing to a party rock anthem?
Yeah. At one point.
And they have really stupid, corny stuff in this, and... Our audience ate it up. There's like two or three times where the audience applauded, and you and I were just like, really? You realize they can't hear you? So, I don't know.
Yeah, especially the old man sailors,
That's the spoiler. Don't talk about that.
They see old... They're at the beginning of the movie. Yeah,
but there's the applause comes later.
They applauded them when they first showed up on screen.
Did they do that? Oh.
You just ruined that.
Well, whatever. Anyways, I will say this. It is... easily the worst acted movie about naval officers and people in the Navy. And that includes Act of Valor, which was terribly acted.
Yeah, that really...
Those were not actors.
That had like a Christian movie of the week,
Fields, yeah. Definitely.
To the acting,
This one has just worse acting. And a lot of it just goes to Rihanna. I mean, she tries to be a badass, but she looks like she just looks ridiculous.
Like, she had, like...
She can't say... There's one scene, and this is... Okay, I'll say this is a little bit of a spoiler. And I don't know whether it's her who does... I don't know. I can imagine where this showed up in the script and got changed. For some reason, she's the weapons expert.
That goes everywhere with
and
them.
She's as ghetto as she's tatted out. She's got gangsta t-shirts and everything.
Yeah, it says hoods on the back. Yeah. Would probably match her knuckle tattoos.
Yeah, and she's talking. She's like, oh, yo, blah, blah, blah. And she's like talking in this like broken English kind of ghetto. And then there's no consistency, whatever. But there's a scene where she's shooting something. I'm not going to say what happens. And they always have to have that punchline. And she goes... Because it takes place in the Hawaiian Islands. It takes place, in Honolulu and Pearl Harbor. And she goes, mahalo, motherfucker. And they cut off fucker so they can say mahalo. And I lean over and I go, I don't think she knows what mahalo means. Mahalo means thank you. That doesn't make any sense to what happened. I think they wanted to say aloha. They wanted to say like goodbye, like hasta la vista, baby.
Yeah.
That's her version. But that would be like if Arnold Schwarzenegger was like, thank you very much, baby. It makes no sense.
Her line delivery sort of reminded me of Halle Berry's, what happens to a toad when it's struck by lightning line from X-Men.
Yeah, the terrible line.
It was
line.
Just like your eyes might really hurt your skull by like hitting them when you roll them.
Then he looks at her, because what was the character?
Fuck me.
What's his name? Bad. The Toad? Was
yeah, it was Toad.
And he looks at her and it wasn't like he was terrified. He's like, that's all you can come up with? But no, the thing is, have you ever been to Hawaii?
No, I haven't.
In Hawaii, and it's not actually, this isn't just a touristy thing. They do say aloha. They do say mahalo. Mahalo means thank you. And you say, and you'll drive out of stuff like McDonald's has mahalo instead of saying thanks on their their trash can. It says mahalo. So mahalo is a very common thing that's said in Hawaii. So everybody identifies aloha. And everyone thinks aloha means hello and goodbye. But aloha is such a nice word. So that didn't seem to work. I guess it said it in the script because and she's like, well, why don't I say mahalo? Because that's a harder sound. I'm like, I'm obsessing about this one line, but I was just like, holy
cow. Yeah, and you say I get like hung up on the weirdest things. Where we're talking about, you know, a board game gone awry with aliens from outer space that has nothing to do with, you know, this movie in any way, shape, or form. You know, you're going on and on about fucking mahalo.
It just
makes no sense. And Rihanna, who is she's terrible. Utterly worthless in a movie as you could possibly be.
There is one scene where she gets in a fight and she's beaten in the face, and I'm like, and wow, I can't believe they did that.
They probably looked at like the hospital photos, like really see like how to apply the makeup.
They're like, you actually look really when your face is all swollen. It kind of gives you this nice glow.
Anyway. That's what Chris Brown said too. That's I'm gonna right. give you a nice glow.
Oh, smack. So, anyways, I will say this: I didn't hate it. And there's worse movies out. And if all you want is just dumb, stupid,
right action. Now there's worse movies out than that.
Yeah, I'm sure. stuff on DVD we'll talk about definitely.
I think it's probably the worst thing that's out in theaters right now.
I don't know. I'd have to look at the list that's out. I'm sure I'll find something that was worse. Anyways, I'm going to give it a kind of sucks. I'm sure you're giving
full
it a
suck.
Full suck. See, you had no question about that. You weren't like, well, wait, I gave it a...
Oh, we worked this out beforehand, so now we're on the same page that I have to give it a suck or rock rating.
Full on suck. All right, let's talk real quickly box office. The Avengers made history by dropping $104 million. The largest drop money-wise of any movie from week to week. But that means it still made $103 million over last weekend, which is another record. So that movie is unstoppable at this point. I don't think... Oh, and then it was Dark Shadows with less than 30 and then everything else. This one, I don't think... I don't think Battleship's going to beat...
No.
Beat Avengers. I think Avengers is still good for a good $50
million. Because how much were you predicting that Battleship will make... Did we discuss it earlier?
I don't know. 50-ish? Maybe?
I don't even know. Maybe if it was coming out in the summertime when it might have kids all the way through the week.
Yeah.
I just have a hard time believing that's going to do even 40, but maybe I'm just completely out of touch with what...
I
would have to describe as mentally deficient people are going to go watch.
The sense I have is that this is going to do like 20% better than John Carter, and that's about what it's doing overseas. All the talk you hear about, it's doing great overseas. It's only made $215 million overseas, which isn't bad. But considering the movie cost over $200 million, I mean, it's a John Carter sized production.
What's funny, what's sad is John Carter. It is a flawed movie. It's a much better movie than this.
Oh, much, much better. And I think if John Carter were released overseas first, I think this sort of release model of releasing it overseas, I think it may have done better in America and people would have given it a shot because it did so well overseas and it was making that made.
I sort of would like to see like what the breakdown is on like what it's doing by country, because I sort of feel like it sort of has like a Godzilla feel, and I know that that type of movie still does really well in Japan and, you know, Asian countries.
It did well overall. I mean, it did well in Russia and did well in the big markets too, like China and Germany. It just did well across the board. John Carter, I think, topped out with a little over $200 million overseas, which is about what Battleship's made. And I think Battleship's overseas run is... Over, it might be able to pull out another $30 million or so overseas, but not much more. So it's making a little bit more than John Carter. And I don't know, but see, never underestimate the love of stupidity of the American audience. They may just flock to this movie.
Yeah, they really might. I think, like with a movie like you sort of compared it to Transformers earlier, Transformers at least has the robots going for it.
Yeah.
I don't know if this has...
The action was not as cool. And especially I'll say this to you, the battleship scene... The actual game battleship scene that you can tell they were trying to emulate, that was pretty boring.
Yeah, it was, you know, they literally play battleship.
Yeah.
You know, but it's not very good. So. Like, I'll give up. The end of the movie was sort of fun, but you know, you could like I said, it's 2 hours and 13 minutes long. Maybe the last 10 minutes of action was really all that had going for it.
I was okay with the action. I think that the audience, I think it's going to be under Avengers. I think Avengers is going to be 50-60. I think this one's probably, I'm going to use my, what I said last week for Dark Shadows, 30-50. I think on the low end, it could do 30. I don't think it's going to do as low, because I think there's a little more, you know, just hype for the big, dumb movie. I think it would have sunk if it came out last week.
Oh, yeah.
Because it would have been an Avengers shadow. So, next we're going to move on. We got an email. I'm actually going to read this verbatim. And I don't do this often, because reading can sometimes sound stilted on the radio. So I want to, but I am going to read this just because I want to get the full email. This comes from Steve/Gabe, and he says, do you believe it is the responsibility for a screenplay writer and or director to create a movie on its own, whether or not based on another medium? For example, I'm watching the Harry Potter series for the first time after having only read the first book. The series is tremendously frustrating for me because it's blatantly obvious during the randomness of scenes that their number one or only goal is to appease the fans. These haphazard scenes, plot points, and multiples of characters that generally do not flow with the continuity of the film are put in, from what I gather, are scenes from the book, whether or not they further the plot of the movie. Although I agree with satisfying the book's fans, shouldn't the movie also be able to stand on its own for a brand new viewer? I find this one-sided treatment irresponsible filmmaking, and it causes me to not like the series because of both the narrow-minded filmmakers and the chaotic product I see on the screen. And he basically says he doesn't want to go back and read all 7 books on Harry Potter. I'm going to break this into 2 things. First of all, and Steve, I've seen your reviews of the Harry Potter movies. And I know you don't like them, and that's cool. But here's the thing. When you're making a generalization about the movie that is in fact not true. You say that it's not, there are examples, but I think Harry Potter is not a good example for that, simply because there's a lot of people who never read any of the books who still saw the movies and loved it. You know, the people who went and made this last Harry Potter movie make $1 billion worldwide. That was not all those people read the book. A lot of people, a good number of people did, but even the first Harry Potter movie that did extremely well, not everybody read the book and still saw it. And I think it was in fact successful in bringing in new fans. And I think you say the same thing about, say, The Lord of the Rings, even Twilight. Now may have inspired people to go and read the books, but the Twilight films and Hunger Games is another example. If only the people who read the book went and saw those movies, they would not be hits. Because they make so much money, it has brought in new fans. So I think that that's just a faulty statement about the Harry Potter series. But that's what you deal with adaptations. Now, with a series, and I think you pointed this out when we were talking off the air, Nick, that you have to adapt it. And they were adapting the Harry Potter movies as they were going, so when they're making 3 and 4, they didn't know exactly how this was going to end.
Well, the first two were, Chris Columbus films. They were much more kid-friendly. They were also 3 hours long, or both of them were near 3 hours long.
They were, 2.5.
I'm thinking with trailers and stuff like that, but they were just adapted differently than 3, 4, 5, the fifth film is I think the second shortest movie of the series, but was the longest book by a wide margin.
Yeah.
They cut tons of stuff out of the
film. And you have to, because the books are 800 pages long.
Yeah. The farther you get into the series, the more they became focused more on telling Harry's story and less about telling everyone else's story. He only, Steve here said he only read the first book.
Well, and even then, if you read the first book, is a vastly different book than all the other ones.
Oh yeah, it's
her first shot at it. It's very sort of haphazardly stream of consciousness. It's not terribly well written, and either she gets a ghostwriter, she's gotten help in the later books, and then of course they expanded. And yeah, if you write 4 or 5 books, you get better at it. And her structure is much, much better in the later books. The first book's very random. This happened.
And to tell you the truth, I'm rereading the first book right now on a Kindle Fire. And it really is, when you sort of get, you know, I'm a third of the way through, I think, right now.
Yeah.
They haven't even gotten to Hogwarts yet, or they just showed up at Hogwarts. You know, you spent a large majority of the first third of the book just, you know, Harry's getting owl deliveries and, you know, going to the zoo. You know, it's sort of a weird book in that sense, and it probably caused them a lot of issue of what to leave out in a film adaption.
Yeah. Well, and here's the thing, and specifically talking to Steve with your reviews of Harry Potter, and I understand you don't like them, and that's fine. I mean, everybody's opinion is valid. You know, I mean, it is. But I think when using it as an example or speaking in broad terms, or even making statements that are very definitive, you get in a little bit of trouble if you're making these statements about movies that you are in the vast disagreement of, either critically, box office wise, or both. Now, for example, Transformers 2 is an incomprehensible film, but I don't think there's very few people out there defending the script of Transformers 2. Most people would be like, I don't care. It has Megan Fox, you can practically see her vagina in that one shot of her on the motorcycle, and it's got big fucking robots blowing things up.
Yeah, and I am completely agreement with most people. It's a very bad movie. Can I sit down and watch that almost any day of the week and get some amount of enjoyment out of it? Absolutely, because, you know, and people will say, well, sort of makes your opinion invalid on this, is I had very low expectations. As long as the robots blow shit up, I'm perfectly fine with it.
Yeah.
You know, the script is not what I showed up for.
Well, and the other, I'll use an example. A friend of mine, another friend, he had, when the movie Capote came out, where Philip Seymour Hoffman played him, not the one with Toby Jones, the actual Capote where he won the Academy Award. My friend saw the movie and absolutely hated it. Hated the beginning to end, back to front, up, down, everything about it. And that's fine. It's a completely valid opinion. And he has his reasons for hating it, and that's cool. And I can appreciate that, and I respect that. However, I found ourselves, once you see a movie that you absolutely hate, you use that as your market standard for bad movies. And so I'd be talking with him and maybe a couple other critics, and he would, somebody would be like, oh yeah, that movie was terrible. He'd be like, yeah, like Capote. And then there was like crickets chirping, because even people who weren't wild about the movie were like, well, no, it was a well-made movie and it was a great acting job. And you're going to be hard pressed to find the people who hated Capote. And he never quite understood that. For example, The Tree of Life. I hated The Tree of Life. And I will bitch and complain about that movie all the time. But if somebody says, like, the terrible movie, I'd be like The Tree of Life. And I'll get weird looks, because people would be like, no, that was a critically, almost universal acclaim for that film. It was nominated for Oscars and all this kind of stuff. And there are people who just love, love, love it. So I can sit there, and that doesn't change my opinion, but I'm not going to use that as... and definitively say, well, it was this. Whereas I'd be like, look, this is how I see Terrence Malick's work. I find it pretentious and boring.
And yeah, you could, you know, not too many people are saying, oh, it's a terrible movie. And someone will go, like Harry Potter and the Sorcerer's Stone.
Yeah.
But if someone says, oh, that's a terrible movie. And someone will go, like Twilight bad.
Well,
oh, then, you know,
yeah.
You know, those are not like critically acclaimed usually across the board by many people. Like, more people are going to go, oh, I sort of see what you mean by...
If somebody says, it was a terrible movie, and somebody goes like Jack and Jill, which didn't do very well. It did okay, but it wasn't a huge hit. It was a dip from Adam Sandler, so the box office wasn't as much there as his earlier films, and it was critically reviled. You know, or Catwoman, when Catwoman came out. You can use that as an example of a bad movie, and you're going to find almost nobody who's going to disagree with you on that. So it's one of those things. I would just say, I may write a review, but, and I'll trash a movie, but I also, it's an understanding that the movie itself, you know, other people may disagree. The other thing is, you got to be careful not to insult the audience of it. There was a guy on Twitter, I won't say who it was ranting about Twilight, and I think he went too far. He started basically making value judgments and character judgments of the fans of the series. And Jen Yamato, who's a huge fan of Twilight, and she's a well-known blogger, and she jumped his shit. And she's like, no, you can say what you want about the movie and not like it, but don't value judge the fans.
Like I just did with Battleship, not maybe 10 minutes ago.
Well, but oops. I mean, the American audience, people viewing audiences' taste for crap is there. That's not necessarily saying that the viewing audience are stupid. Do you know what? You love Transformers, too?
No. But it, no, so. I'm just saying I think I might have
inadvertently,
on purpose, said that but people with Battleship might be.
Yeah, I mean, I can sit there and say, well, you know, Twilight is emotional pornography for 13-year-old girls, and it is. But there's people who that's a fantasy, and everybody likes shit. That's the thing. Everybody likes crap. Everybody likes good things. And everybody likes things that most everybody else... Everybody hates things that most everybody else likes. So, you know, this... Just it lends to credibility to at least kind of approach things with a little more, I guess, acknowledgement of what the worldview is, and be like, and I disagree because, as opposed to just rolling in and trashing it.
Yeah, because, you know, me saying I like Transformers Revenge of the Fallen, yeah, I know some people are just going to say, your opinion, shit.
Yeah.
For, you know, I'm going to judge everything that you say is good against your opinion of Transformers Revenge of the Fallen.
Well, and I'll get that.
And I've gotten that because I've supported the movie Drive, of all movies.
I love Drive.
I really liked it too. And I've had people say, you know, I've gotten emails saying, you know, I'm not going to listen to anything you ever write again because you think Drive is a great movie. Okay.
Well, like I do not like Sunset Boulevard. I'm not a big fan of Sunset Boulevard. I find it overly long and kind of dull. And I'm not a big fan of movies about movies, actually. And, you know, and this one's really steeped in that culture. And so I gave it a harsh review on Rotten Tomatoes. And every now and then I get somebody who's like, well, you didn't like Sunset Boulevard, so your opinion's stupid. And I'm like, well, everybody likes or dislikes stuff. And I like crap. I like G-Force. I thought G-Force was fun. I'm completely aware it's about fucking hamsters doing spy work. And that's completely stupid. But there you go. But getting back to your question, Steve, is it the responsibility of the screenwriter and or director to create a movie on its own, whether or not based on another medium? Yes. But when you adapt a film, you have to adapt a film. And I think it's intellectually dishonest to adapt a film out of what it originally was. And every now and then I'll see a movie and I'll say, well, this film had this element to it. Like Twilight, I didn't like the Twilight movies, but I can't necessarily blame the film. I can blame Catherine Hardwicke because she did a shitty job actually making a movie. But I can't blame David Slade and Chris Weiss and who's it, Bill Condon. Mm-hmm. I can't blame them for their adaptations because they do, in fact, do good adaptations of the Twilight stories. I just think they're crappy stories.
Yeah, you know, it's sort of like polishing a turd. You can only do so much with it. You know, it's sort of like saying, well, the director's cut of Highlander 2 is much better than Highlander 2.
Yeah.
Just the theatrical cut. Well, there's only so much you can really do with that.
Well, yeah, but the point being is that, you know, I think it's more important to be true to the source material because that's who liked it. And if you change it too much, you end up something with like The Lawnmower Man, which is in name only. The same kind of film, I think you need to be like John Carter's a great example. People are like, well, this and that and seem this, and I'm like, you know what, if you read the books, this is what it's about. You know, it's a good adaptation of John Carter, and that was never going to do well.
And that's sort of what I said last week in my review of Dark Shadows was, you know, they might have done Dark Shadows a great, you know, done a great job sort of emulating the tone of the film or the tone of the show.
Yeah.
But I feel like that joke was maybe lost on people that don't know the show.
Yeah.
And that's a great number of the audience that would go see it.
But see, I think Dark Shadows, they did change it. It was not like they made it into a goofy comedy, and that's not what the show was.
Yeah, and considering how many people like myself that, you know, went off the air 10 years before I was born, have no real interest in getting into 1,200 plus episodes of Dark Shadows.
Yeah.
You know, I went into it and I just... Well, maybe this is the way it was. Maybe it wasn't. I have no idea.
Yeah, but getting to the specifics of the Harry Potter films, the first book's very haphazard and just here and there, and it is sort of this scattershot of this mosaic of shit that happens to this kid in this wizard school. The second book is a little bit... And they all follow the same formula. So, you know, you can't get irritated at that because it's all about a year at Hogwarts, and there's always a threat, and a lot of times it's It turns out to be Voldemort somehow.
And it's really convenient that it always falls almost exactly during the school year. Yeah, during the summer, it's not very, you know,
they always defeat might happen, them right at the end.
Yeah, it's amazing when like May or June comes around, the showdown with whoever always occurs, and they must know that, you know, school year is coming to an end. We better try and kill Harry soon.
Yeah, but even then, as they were doing the movies, the screenwriter was working with J.K. Rowling and trying to say, is this important? Do I need to put this in? So even though it seems random, I mean, they're trying to do their best, and they're trying to adapt it, and they're trying to make it. I don't think that they ignored the new viewers, because I didn't read the books until later on.
Yeah, nor did I.
And I was totally cool with the movies.
And what's funny is I disliked the first two movies immensely when I first saw them in 2001 and 2002. I like them more now, though, when I look back after I saw, especially Prisoner of Azkaban, which is the third book.
Yeah.
And her third film, and Goblet of Fire, which is the third or fourth film. When I went back and saw number one and two again, it worked much better than as like individual standalone movies for me.
I'll give another good example of this, of a movie that actually was almost too, and here's the thing. This movie was almost too true to the books. And that would be Scott Pilgrim versus the World. That was a great adaptation of those books. But it didn't go to find a new audience at all. I don't know if that would have been possible, because the book is so out there. The sort of like the world it lives in is so galvanized to be the way it is that to adapt it more mainstream, I can't even imagine how to do that. So it did totally go for its audience. Watchmen was kind of the same way. It went for the people who knew the material, but it wasn't as translatable to the mainstream. But, and is that a good thing or a bad thing? Well, I mean, sure, maybe it was great for the books, but it didn't do a whole lot of good for the studio, and it didn't set the stage to do anything more, because people will be like, we spent all that money on Scott Pilgrim, why should we make a sequel when that movie didn't do very well?
And what's funny is, you know, you bring up two movies, Scott Pilgrim versus World. I didn't see it in the theater.
Yeah,
you know, and I had no desire to see it at the theater, and I didn't read the comic. I didn't read the Watchmen books either, but I was, you know, opening weekend, I was there ready to see that. So I don't know. I haven't read the original source material for either, but, you know.
They were both good adaptations. I think the part of the reason why Watchmen didn't click is because it was an R-rated film. And I literally had people on the radio when I do interviews. They're like, so is this like The Incredibles? I'm like, no. No, not at all. Not at all like The Incredibles. That one's G-rated. This one has almost rape in it. And a lot of suggested rape in the past. And murdering people. And a lot of awful, horrible things.
The Incredibles would be interesting with a little more Watchmen in it.
If Frozone like totally raped Dash, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Feeling a little cold? Anyways. I hope that answers your question. So I think, yes, it is the responsibility of the people who make the movie to create the movie on its own. And that's ultimately the goal, because that's why the studio is plopping down $100 million to do this. You can't make it for an audience that's only going to give you 30.
Yeah, because if you just have a movie where you're just going after that exact audience and not trying to bring anyone else in, you know, there's not a lot of room for profit in there. You need to try and build a bigger audience and try and make it accessible, because people aren't going to go see something that they're like, well, I'm just never going to be able to get into this.
Yeah. And studios, I actually applaud studios for trying to make true adaptations of the books, trying to be closer to the original source material, because even at the neglect of a brand new audience, because that's what made it popular in the first place, as opposed to going back to stuff that they were making sometimes in the 70s and 80s where they'd adapt it and you'd be like, this is uncomparable to the original source material. You know,
it's sort of like what happened with Poor Battleship. You know, it's just not comparable to the original game.
There's nothing. You look Battleship. It's like, let's put Hasbro in there, 'cause they did Transformers, and we'll put robot looking things, Halo and Kia Habsner singing party rock. Anyway, speaking of Battleship and children's games, let's move on to the Fat Guy Five. This is five children's games that should be movies. Now, the first one, of course, is Hungry Hungry Hippos, which we've all seen that fake poster on Facebook Have you seen that?
No, I just made a liar out of you.
Oh my God. It's a picture. I'll have to find it and show it to you. It's a picture of this giant hippo eating a ship in the middle of the ocean. It's like hungry, hungry hippos coming summer 2012. I mean, and I watch it. I'm like, you know what? I would watch the fuck out of giant hippos eating ships in the ocean. I actually think it would be better than Battleship. Could you imagine massive giant hippos?
And I'd have to imagine there'd have to be some type of supernatural element, like somebody like.
Pretty sure if you got giant fucking hippos.
But did a wizard make them? Like, was it some type of weird curse?
Could be Godzilla. Or were
they aliens, landing? Alien hippos? Yeah, alien hippos.
I don't know.
I wonder how that would work.
I think that would be a great tentpole, so I would watch the hell out of that movie. The next one is Operation.
So pretty much you want a Saw movie?
Yeah, I think you could totally do a movie, and they have to get it out, and then when it electrocutes them, if they don't pull out the funny bone right or something like that.
Would the Jigsaw-type character actually be a guy that sort of looked like the guy having the operation but with the light-up nose?
The big nose. Well, you know, Billy the Puppet from Saw? It kind of looks like the guy from Operation. He'd be like, welcome.
Yeah, I also feel like that would be like really ripe for like a porno, like spoof of Operation as well.
I'm sure you could do a spoof of Hungry Hungry Hippos.
Yeah, you just put
Riley Steele in a hippo mask and she could suck a guy off.
Well, I just imagine it's more like a really big woman crowd with like
or a BBW,
yeah, a BBW film like. Four BBWs, but then you have them like all in different sort of like ones like in a yellow leotard and ones in like a purple leotard, and then there's like,
could we get the girl or the woman from Three's Company who played Greedy Gretchen to be the? Did you ever watch Three's Company?
I don't recognize that particular character.
Get Greedy Gretchen to be the madam.
What
of
about
this
that like
team?
Really big girl from the Jack? I think it was Jackass 2 that sort of lays on Wee Man. Do you remember that?
Are you talking?
John Waters makes Wee Man disappear by having her lay on top of him.
Are you talking about Marlon Brando?
No.
Okay.
Strangely, I'm not talking about Marlon
Are you talking
Brando.
About Roseanne Barr? The presidential candidate Roseanne Barr, starring in Hungry Hungry Hippos, fap porn?
She could really star in either the regular film adaption or its spoof.
And Operation.
John Goodman, if he was desperate enough for work, I guess he could also work his way into either of those films.
Fap porn. The Octomom's doing fap porn now. Anyways, let's move on. Speaking of Octomom, no.
Hey, I'm not really sure how you're going to segue that into this.
Jenga, this could be an experimental film.
Octomom somehow segued into Jenga.
I don't know. Something like, you get anything come out of that
all,
vagina?
Are all her kids like stacked, and you like pull one kid out, and all of them fall?
She can have all that. Well, I picture Octomom's vagina kind of like the Super Globetrotters. You ever watch the Super Globetrotters?
Well, you're before too my young. Time.
And it was they took the original the classic Globetrotters like Curly Neal and all them, and they. It was Metal Lark Lemon, one of them. But one of them, and there was a cartoon with the Globetrotters where they help people solve crimes or whatever. And then they turned into Super Globetrotters. And like Curly Neal, because he always had the shaved head, he turned into a giant basketball. And one of the guys who had a big afro, it was the 70s, so God knows, I don't even know who it was. But his afro then became freaking redonkulously huge. And it was like a TARDIS afro where he could take anything out of it. You know, he'd be like, oh, my gosh, you need a chainsaw?
It's weird how our minds are different, because you think, like, Octomom's vagina, you think Globetrotters. Mm. I think of, like, that weird dimensional vortex from Event Horizon, where if you go in, then you're, like, in that, like, hell world.
Where everyone's making like, a snuff film?
Yeah, where it's just, like, people... you know, fucking each other with maggots and, you know, pulling out their own entrails and eating them.
You say that like it's not normal.
You know, it's... You think Globetrotters, I think, you know, where some gothic ship takes you to hate fuck you, I guess.
Well, okay. We'll leave the Octomom and her vagina.
So back to Jenga, the movie.
Jenga. Well, that's just going to be an experimental film. The other one is, the next one is Chutes and Ladders. Do you ever play Chutes and Ladders?
I did.
Slides and ladders and everything. It could be like Speed Racer. It could be like 2.5 hours long, directed by the Wachowski, candy colored, and... just sensory overload.
What if you did it more like, you know, a cabin in the woods scenario with Chutes and Ladders?
I think that could be cool.
I could definitely get behind, like, instead of just, you know, you're in a cabin, you know, you're in some weird...
You're on chutes and ladders.
Yeah. You know, that was going to be a lot deeper until I went into, like, Cabin Woods, except it's chutes and ladders instead in the woods.
It's not a ladder. It's not a cabin.
It's a chute and possibly a ladder. Just a lot some of type ladders. Of combination.
And then the last one, I put this in as a joke, Chess the Movie, followed, of course, by Checkers, the sequel. But, you know, and then I started thinking about Chess the Movie, and I'm like, you know what? I started talking to my son about this while we were going to see Battleship. I said, you know, if done right, Chess the Movie would be fucking awesome. Same with Hungry Hungry Hippos. But imagine, Chess the Movie, you got two warring kings, two warring kingdoms. And so one always dresses in black and one dresses in white. And so you have the king versus king, but they're protected. And they have like the warrior queen who has to fight each other. And they've got knights that are on giant horses that can leap over the army lines. The line of pawns, all their people. And you have the bishops who are, of course, the religious people. Then they come sliding through killing people. This could be like awesome. And then and at the very end, they can kind of catch one king and he can't move anywhere because if he tries to jump out the window, he'll be killed by the knight. But if he tries to run down the hallway, he'll be killed by the queen or whatever. Chess the Movie.
I guess when I think Chess the Movie, I just think of that like old like Marines commercial where it was like all the Marines on the on the board.
Or the Harry Potter chess pieces.
Nope, I didn't think of that one.
You could have a like History of the World Part 1 where King humped the Queen. Everybody humped the Queen. Gang,
yeah,
gang.
It's either like the Marine commercial or like a Tom Petty video. I don't know.
Well, you know, if you did Chess the Movie, it would be called like King versus King or something like that. Or it would be The King's War. It would have a more compelling title.
Obviously. But
I could totally see it go, and they wouldn't have to pay royalties to anybody. Cause nobody owns chess. And then you can have like Bobby Fischer kind of lurch on looking like a homeless person, because that's what is he even alive?
No, Bobby Fischer's dead.
Is he dead?
Mm-hmm.
You did. Then you go.
Yes, I traveled. I think he was living in Japan, and I murdered him.
Oh, and well. Came back. Fuck you, Bobby Fischer.
Fucking asshole.
Ass. Anyways, Chess the Movie. The Checkers, the sequel, would be like the Checkers
that's like the Ernest Goes to Jail type movie, except about checkers.
Ernest Goes to Jail is fucking awesome. Thank you very much.
Still, it's still an Ernest movie.
Ernest. Look, Jim Varney was a national treasure, man. I will not have somebody badmouth Jim Varney. But no, Checkers would be like the Asylum version of chess.
I think it would just be the one for dummies. So you release them at the same time, and you know you have like your smart. You release Checkers to your neighborhood or to your big Cineplex, and then you release chess to your art house theater. See? And
I still think
pretty much the same movie with the same people. You just
if they suddenly like announce in the next couple of weeks that they're doing Chess the Movie and they're going to call it the King War, the War of Kings, or something like that, I would be pissed off. I'll want my fucking royalty. Damn it.
You get luck with that.
I'll send Nick Harum after you, and he'll do what he did to Bobby Fischer. He will rape him in the face and then kill him. Did I get that accurate? Is that what happened?
Is it really raping his face if he asked for it?
Well,
like, he asked for it with his mouth, not just with his eyes, like most of the rape victims.
not how my dates normally go.
His mouth said no, but his eyes said yes.
Oh, God, get it out of me. I took that as I liked it. Anyways.
I just figured you wanted it out of him in someplace else. So.
Oh, of course. You know. And raping in the face, I had heard that you rape just kind of around the face a little bit. Just a little bit of rape.
As long as you finish around the belly button, you know, you're okay.
Well, you got to have something to catch it.
Yeah.
Then it becomes a mess.
Yeah, the tummy hair is a nice...
Until he is matted down. That's gross. We're going off the rails. We got to go to a break. When we come back, DVDs.
The Queen section.
And welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies. We are wrapping things up at the very end here. We talked about what to expect when you're expecting. We talked about The Dictator. We talked a lot about Battleship. We answered a listener voicemail. or email. Excuse me, it was an email.
Yeah, I don't even know if we really answered it or just talked a lot about it.
We talked about stuff that he mentioned in the email. I don't know if it actually answers anything.
If he was trying to take notes, I think he probably gave up.
We failed. anyways, now, what's coming up next?
I think we are doing the DVD roundup.
The world famous DVD roundup.
The world famous DVD roundup.
It's the world famous! We are heard in various countries. So yeah, it's world famous. So there, get it right. Anyways, you want to start? I always like to give the guest a chance to start.
Yeah, you can go.
All right. Well,
I guess. You've worn me out now.
I guess. First one is The Gray, which is the Liam Neeson movie about him versus wolves. That's it.
It sounds like there should be more to that movie, but there really isn't.
There pretty much isn't. It's not a bad movie.
No, it's not a bad movie. I do have my big issue with this. I don't really feel like it delivered on everything it advertised.
It does not deliver on the promises it advertises. That's for doggone sure.
It's just like, I feel like it's a 4-star movie up until maybe the last 10 minutes.
Yeah.
And then it just loses a whole star for me.
Yeah. No, I hear that.
In Kevin's words, it kind of rocks, mm-hmm. but it was so close to being like...
Totally rocks.
Completely rocks.
Yeah. There's a payoff it doesn't give. There's Rampart. Did you see Rampart?
I have not.
That's the one, of course, about Woody Harrelson. He plays a corrupt cop in the late 90s during the Rampart scandal in LA, and it's him kind of coming to terms with all of his corruption. It's okay. It's a bit, it's very award filmy. It's very end of the year award filmy where it's all about his performance. And
now if Woody Harrelson went up against, you know, Denzel from Training Day.
Do you know, I've never seen Training Day. That's one of those that I missed. I just never have.
That's sort of surprising that that's, you know, just hasn't, like, I feel like that's a movie that you would have accidentally seen by now.
Well, it was, I think it was, what, like in 2000? It was
2001, I think.
Yeah, it was before I actually did reviews, so there's, and I had a kid. You know, so, children, what are those for?
You know, that's when you just put your headphones in the delivery room and just like, I'm sorry, honey, you know, King Kong ain't got nothing on you.
Well, yeah. I don't think you ever want to say that to your wife. Let's just point that out.
I'm not having any babies right now.
You're not even going to practice with that kind of line. Let's put it that way. I never saw Training Day because I hadn't been reviewing films at the time, and so I wasn't seeing everything that was out. I always saw it at the video store, but never got it.
I wish I would have asked you that question about, you know, that before we went on the air. Mm-hmm. Because then I wouldn't have asked it.
now I feel dumb. But no, Rampart's not that good. It's one of those specific one-person movies that they're trying to win an award for and didn't win. There's also Chronicle, which isn't that good.
No.
A lot of people liked it. I'll give them that, but I didn't like it.
Now, how do they refer to it again? I need to probably look it
found
up here.
Footage?
Like, but I feel like on the cover, they actually like refer to it as the found... Is it the found footage edition? Which I think
know.
Is sort of a weird way of...
The Lost Tapes edition? I don't know.
Since it is, you know, a found footage movie. Yeah. So calling it the found footage edition is a little strange, but... Yeah.
There's also Albert Nobbs, or as I like to call it, Upstairs, Downstairs, What? Which is about a woman... What is it called? The Lost Footage Edition. Because they had the found footage for the movie. This is the Lost Footage.
Can I just say I really hate Chronicle?
I do not
like Chronicle. And this title to the Blu-ray just makes me... Dislike it more.
Makes you want to punch it. Anyways, makes you want to do to it what you did to Bobby Fischer. If you want to know what that is, go listen to the middle segment. Or don't. Because if you're listening on this radio or on the radio, you're going to be offended. Albert Nobbs is actually pretty decent. It's not great, not perfect, but it's decent. And then One for the Money, which is also not a good movie, starring Katherine Heigl as Janet Ivanovich's detective, Stephanie Plum, I think. Not that good of a movie. Let's move on. What do you got? You got 2 minutes.
My Blu-ray call-out probably would be for the Criterion edition of Being John Malkovich.
Does it provide you with a door that you can climb in and be part of John Malkovich's
brain? I guess
brain?
If you actually consider that by opening the actual Blu-ray case is walking into John Malkovich's mind, then yes, it does.
Oh, okay, cool.
Your mileage may vary.
Okay.
If you don't go into his mind, you probably opened up the Blu-ray box wrong.
Yeah.
And I suggest you take it back and get another copy.
Or you've opened up The Devil Inside, which is our stinker of the week, which is just a terrible, terrible another found footage movie. But and the reason this just beat out Chronicle is because at least Chronicle had ambition of some sorts. The Devil Inside is just terrible.
But The Devil Inside had that creepy nun that you see that advertised everywhere. That's like
that
walks by.
That's like this like scenery in a movie. In the movie, it's not even a character. It's scenery. Ugh.
Yeah, it's like an evil looking bush, except it's a nun.
It's not a bush. It's a nun. Anyways, review wrap up. Battleship. I said kind of sucks. You said totally sucks.
Totally sucks. Right. Worthless.
The Dictator, I said totally rocks. And I think you said totally rocks. I think we determined that. We zeroed in on that.
We did.
And then What to Expect When You're Expecting gets a preemptive suck because they didn't screen it for us, but I'm pretty sure it's going to suck. Next week, we're going to be talking Men in Black 3. Men in Black 3? Oh, I don't know.
Did we really didn't we discuss like when the last time Will Smith had like a... like a real big
Hancock, movie. Courtesy of Battleship director Peter Berg. Then there's also Chernobyl Diaries. Go to fatguysofthemovies.com to find us out. You have a 10 seconds. Nick, tell us where to find you.
I'm at movieshateyou2.com and also on Facebook, facebook.com/movieshateyou2, and on Twitter, movieshateyou, the letter U, 2, T-O-O.
Sounds good. We will talk to you guys later. Thanks, Nick, for being on the show.
Thank you.
Like the show you just heard? Then head on over to FatGuysAtTheMovies.com to hear more. Fat Guys Network flagship show, Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. The Idiot Boxers with Kevin and Merrill. Celluloid Spotlight with Merrill and Hash. And if you like any of what you hear, kick us a few bucks using the donation button on the sidebar. Or just leave us an iTunes review. Fat Guys Network is where the ooey-gooey podcasting goodness is at 24 hours a day, 7 days a week.